Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the kingdom of God. We're going to talk about the enemy. Who's the enemy? There's a cartoon character once said, "We have seen the enemy. He is us." And of course, that's really the problem, is that we are selfish. We are judgmental. We do not care about our neighbors. We want our own comfort. We want what we want. Now, that's really selfish to say. So we do things so that it doesn't appear that we're selfish. We want to appear good too, because we're vain. So we do things, you know, like go to church. We go to church, we dress up, and we go there, and we have this desire to look good. Now, of course, that's not you. You don't do that. You know, that's another thing. We have philosophies about Christ, about our religion. You know, but, you know, if we're Jewish, it's Moses and Abraham, and if you're Muslim, it's this, that, or the other thing. You know, like Muslim, everybody thinks Muslims are such a problem. Well, obviously, anybody who reads the life history published by Muslims of Muhammad know that there's a serious problem with that religion. You know, it advocates slavery, it advocates, you know, rape, it advocates murder, it advocates invasion and oppression. And, I mean, it's right there in the text. I mean, it's not a secret. But do all Muslims do that? I mean, you know, like I saw an interview with, I think it's Aslan, I think that's his name, the guy who wrote the book, The Zealot, who I disagree with tremendously in his book. But he's a Muslim, and there's millions, even billions of Muslims out there. And one of the things that he said during the interview, you know, like they were talking about female mutilation and rape and all these kinds of things, which is a part of the religion of Muslims, some Muslims. He says, well, that's an African problem. That happens there. It doesn't happen over here where there are millions and millions of Muslims. They don't do that. That's a cultural problem. And he's right. And even in Africa, all Muslims don't do that. But in Saudi Arabia, I mean, they're extremely oppressive of the women. And you could try to say, well, okay, the difference is Sunni and Shiite. But that doesn't bear out when you go from country to country. It is in an area of dominance. People who label themselves a particular religion have a problem with oppression of women. Or, you know, invading other countries, or cutting people's heads off, and all these sorts of things. And to use this blanket label is going to create injustice in the minds of people. Most Muslim countries are Muslim countries because of the original policy of Muhammad of spreading the Muslim faith by force. You know, I mean, killing your opposition. Forcing everybody in the community to become a Muslim or pay a tax. And so lots of people became Muslim because they couldn't afford the tax. It was starving them. And because you were less likely to get beat up on the street. So whole nations, and then of course then it passes down from generation to generation that's a Muslim nation. But this is what he said that I thought was so interesting. He says, fortunately, most Muslims are very bad Muslims, and therefore very good people, because they don't actually do, they're not actually spreading the Muslim faith by force. Now, that's hard to get your mind around. You know, this guy is a Muslim, and you start asking yourself, so why are you a Muslim? If you know that Muhammad you know, advocated rape, multiple wives, slavery, spreading the faith by force. I mean, he said a lot of good things too, because you had to in order to get any kind of popularity. You couldn't be totally degenerate in every aspect. You know, like he actually said that you weren't to kill Christians and monks and monasteries. You know, because otherwise it would just been an absolute, because the monks and monasteries back then actually provided a service to the community. And they were important of stabilizing social welfare of the community. And he didn't want to annihilate all that, because then the problems would all fall upon him. So he let them live as long as they provided that service. And then it gave him a semblance of being, you know, merciful. But they could not question his authority or the authority of those who came after him. And of course, you know, that was one of the things, the whole idea of the Sunni and the Shiites. This had to do with who takes power next, because they had created this huge office of power. And so men who seek power seek office, and they couldn't decide on who should be in. Should it be the, you know, one of the sons of Muhammad, or should it be one of the generals, or who? And so there was fighting over that, and it went back and forth for a long time, which when they're fighting each other, it gave everybody else a respite. Actually, it saved Europe. Europe was on the verge of being totally annihilated. And then they began to fight amongst themselves as to, you know, who should be in charge. Same thing with Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan was on the verge of annihilating Europe and destroying the entire culture so that it would exist no more. And he died. And so therefore they had to go away for 20 years to figure out who was going to be in charge. And they had a lot of trouble doing that. But right now, there's an invasion of Europe. And they're telling you on the news. I mean, they admit it wholeheartedly. They admit it right in the equivalent to the Congress in Germany, that in 20 years, Germany will not exist. The Germany you know, with Germans in it, ruling the nation, will not exist. They will be gone. And the people telling you this are actually inviting the Muslims in. Now, are Muslims bad? No, there are lots of refugees that would be good, decent people. And, you know, people are saying, well, there is no evidence that, you know, that there's a fifth column coming with this, you know, and everything. And their bleeding hearts want to think that. And, you know, and I have a great deal of compassion for the people that are being absolutely brutalized in those nations. And I think we should bring them in. But how do you know, though? They talk about vetting them, finding out who is who. The problem is that the ones who are vetting them, I wouldn't trust to make those decisions. It's a vast bureaucracy. The, you know, the INS and the ICE, which is, you know, the immigration people that are in charge of this, I've been in those offices. Those people are a mess. I mean, it's hard to find a good-spirited person in there. I mean, I'm sure they're in there. But we didn't come across very many of them. It has the spirit of a bureaucracy. You know, and I've quoted in the last week in posts and articles that I've put up, I've quoted a Supreme Court justice, William O. Douglas, who talks about the new George the Third, and what he's talking about is the vast bureaucracy. He calls it the vast bureaucracy that doesn't change no matter who you elect. And there's an actual, because of the structure of your government, that's operating now, that's doing the job of government, it's actually going to draw a certain kind of person into offices of power and control and supposedly of service, but will actually be reeking with the spirit of the beast, of control, heartless, destructive, totalitarian. Those are the people that are going to work their way up. Fortunately, also, there will be people that are just totally lazy, and they're not going to be very good at their jobs. But lurking in the wings are this fascist spirit, you know, what we call, you know, I always had this trouble, and I couldn't figure out what is the difference between fascism and communism, because they were killing each other, they were fighting each other. But in communism, where it eventually went, it was doing the exact same thing as fascism. You know, I mean, I've referred to the guy in Dr. Zhivago. I should probably force myself to watch that movie again so I can find out what the name of the character is. But the little mousy guy with the glass, round glasses, who was advocating communism, he was all for saving the worker and saving, you know, these guys were, you know, the Cossacks are coming in and beating and killing people, and he wanted to stop that, but he became that. And he became that because he turned his back on a little tiny, you know, one-line element of morality, of a guide to morality. He just turned his back on that and could not see it. He had blinders. He could not see it. When I look out into the world today, everybody has that blinder on. Conservatives, liberals, libertarians, constitutionalists. Amongst all those people, they all have that same blinder, that little, you know, round-eyed guy who became this murdering, evil force in the Soviet Union that helped bring about communism and the oppression of an entire nation and a Holocaust that exceeded anything that the Germans had done. A very close person to me went over there to train people after Perestroika first began to take over, and they were trying to get people back into private businesses, and they couldn't do it. He said it was just impossible. He says they're genetically dead. What he meant was that everybody who had the courage to do something on their own, to take on responsibility, to get a job done, you know, this American go-getter, get-the-job-done kind of personality was gone from the population. Now, he came back here to America, and now he sees that it's around in America, but it's almost gone. It's being destroyed. You know, the whole thing that we see, you know, we've done a lot of articles recently on the Bundy occupation of the refuge out there in Oregon. Of course, I'm in Oregon. I know people that you've been seeing on the news in that. I've known them for years, know their kids. They've been in the house. They've worked for me. The sheriff, for one. And so I know, and I've worked with ranchers. I've worked with the BLM. I've worked with the Forest Service. I actually worked for the Forest Service even. I fought fires. Those that were started by arsons and those that were started by the Forest Service for years. So I'm very familiar with on-the-ground understanding of the issues. I'm probably one of the few people that ever read the Taylor Grazing Act and some of these other, you know, the Swamp Reduction Act. I mean, most people don't even know what's going on over there. I've read the Constitution. I understand what, you know, Bundy's argument is about the Constitution. And he has a very good case about the federal government not having any right, according to the Constitution, to come in and own and control land in the states. The Constitution doesn't give them the power to do that back then in 1792. or 98 or 1860 or whenever. Except that's not what's really going on. These agencies are not actually working off of those clauses of the Constitution. You know, people are always talking about getting back to common law. They don't understand natural law or the, you know, jus naturale or jus gentium. They don't understand these things. And so, but what I do understand is they see an injustice and they want to do something about it. They say that's not right what's going on there. And I gave some examples, and you know, we have an article up on the Hammonds, and you'll read some stuff there that you won't read other places, or at least not all put together in other places, the way we've put it together there. And, you know, we've got, you know, we gave a couple of examples, like Terry Lynn Barton, who was a Forest Service employee who actually went and started a fire during a high fire danger period. And her job was to make sure that nobody started a fire in any of the campgrounds. She was actually driving around in a $50,000 rig and getting paid a salary to go around and make sure nobody started any fires in any of the camp areas because it was such a high fire danger period because of the weather conditions. And she went and she started a fire. Burned, blackened, just totally destroyed 138,000 acres. 138,000 acres. Destroyed over 133 homes, private homes. A lot of this land was private too. Over 8,000 people had to be evacuated because of what she did. She served 6 years in jail. The Bundys together for supposedly burning about 130 acres are going to serve 10 years in jail. You know, this woman, you know, devastated Colorado. Millions upon millions upon millions of dollars worth of damage. Because she did the absolute opposite of what she was already being paid to do. And she's done 6 years in jail. Personally, I wouldn't have sent her to jail. But that's your theory of justice. Send somebody to jail costs the taxpayers another $25,000 to $30,000 a year and put somebody behind bars. That probably will not ever light a match again because she was devastated by what she did. But she got 6 years she served in jail. She's supposed to pay some of this money back, supposedly. Of course, she never will. But let me give you another case. April 2013, the U.S. Forest Service intentionally set a fire. They actually went out with the intention of setting a fire. Now, the recommendations of all the local ranchers was that they don't start this fire because the weather conditions were terrible. This was April, and it was in the Dakotas. The weather people were saying, don't start the fire because it was extremely dangerous to do so. You would likely lose control of the fire. This is the Lemon Fire, South Dakota. They started the fire anyway. You know, because, you know, they're the government. They can do what they want. Got out of control. Burned 11,000 acres. Some of it public ground, some of it private ground. Did over $2.5 million worth of damage. People came to them and said, you know, you've done this damage. Did they get a fine for doing it? No, because they're the guys who decide who gets the fine. So they didn't get fined. Did they pay anybody for all the fences and the buildings that they burned up? No. They say they don't have any responsibility. They don't have to pay anybody for the damage they've done. Intentionally done. against the advice of the people who, you can see on our website, we got videos of them actually lighting fires while ranchers are running around trying to create fire breaks to prevent them from lighting fires. You know, and they're burning up cattle alive, burning them up alive. And the cattle, because the cattle are out on the graze and they're setting fires all around them. They burn up ranches. They burn up fences. You know, burning up fences, you say, oh, they burned up a fence. We're talking about fences that are covering tens of thousands of square miles. We're talking about, you know, what could be easily $500,000 or $1 million worth of fences, depending on how big they get their fires. I've been on these fires. They've acted irresponsibly. You know, most of the fires, many, I shouldn't say most, but many of the fires that we had in this area, I mean, we had a fire come through here, and the Forest Service didn't put it out. They could have put it out, but they used up all their overtime, so they couldn't send anybody out. They knew where the fire was, and they let it get out of control, and it burned up, you know, thousands of acres. And the ranchers were telling them, it says, this fire is going to burn downhill this afternoon. You've got to put the, and they said, oh, no, fires don't burn downhill. Every day this happened. And every day they would burn downhill. And finally at the end, when people were having a meeting explaining how terrible they had behaved, how terrible the Forest Service was, because the Forest Service was keeping people from putting the fire out. There were finally, in some cases, there were ranchers who jumped on their own cat and just drove it up the hill and put the fire out. That's what stopped it in many areas. Most of the fire breaks that stopped it and saved homes was created by the people. It wasn't created by the Forest Service. Matter of fact, the Forest Service was ordering the people, threatening them with arrest if they didn't get out of the area. And they said, we're not leaving because our neighbor's house is in danger. Meanwhile, the Forest Service is sitting down on the road, dozens and dozens of firefighters in their yellow jackets and their green pants, and they're sitting there drinking coffee. Now, I know there are good, hardworking firefighters, but it is the top is overburdened with irresponsible bureaucrats who don't understand how to get the job done. They're bureaucrats. They're not in the business of getting the job done. See, in private business, if you don't get the job done, you starve. You go out of business. But in the government, that's not a problem. And it's because of the nature and structure of the institution. And we've given it tremendous power. Now, we're going to take this another direction, this conversation another direction, because I haven't told you yet what it is that we miss that little guy in Dr. Zhivago was not seeing, that caused the destruction of millions upon millions upon millions of people. We're going to get there next, so be right back. The Lord openeth the eyes of the blind, and the Lord raiseth them up that are bowed down. The Lord loveth the righteous. This is Psalms 146:8. God's love opens your eyes. It takes the scales off your eyes. But in order to receive God's love, you must be willing to see. But if you think you see already, then Christ talks about you will be made blind. This is part of the teachings that Christ gave us. Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind. Well, he's talking about those who think they already know. And so what we're doing in these series is trying to show you what Christ was trying to help people see. And Peter would say the same thing, that through covetousness that you would be made merchandise. You would curse your children. You would go back and become entangled in the elements of the world. That is the cause. When we talk about contracts in the world and of the world, we're simply talking about systems and agreements where you can actually see the evidence of the fact that you're already in agreement with ideas like one purse, like eating at the table of kings, benefactors who exercise authority. And they're not really benefactors. They only give you what they take away from others. These are the fathers of the earth. These are the terminologies. And we show you the history. We show you how this applied back then. We show you how it applied throughout the ages. We show you how it applied in our times today. But it is absolutely essential that you change what you are in agreement with. That's repentance. You're in agreement with the idea that it's okay to covet. It's okay to desire what belongs to your neighbor for your personal benefit. And it's okay not to forgive. Christ's love will open your eyes, but it also will be like hot coals upon the head of those who do not want to see. They will hate it. If Christ is in you, if you're coming in the name of Christ, you need to be coming with a desire to serve, to forgive, to be a righteous individual. That is your desire. And you need to act, not just say, Lord, Lord, but actually become a doer of that word. And then His love can bless you, His grace. If you only love those who love you, if you only love those who help you, care about you, that are close to you, what grace have you? This is what it says. I want you to keep that in mind. Do not get carried away with contracts and jurisdictions and laws, etc. Keep in mind that this is about coming into agreement with Christ. And join the network. Find other people seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. That daily ministration based on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. A government that does not exercise authority but exercises love and charity and hope. And until then, peace on your house and may God be with you. Well, welcome back to the Keys of the Kingdom. So what is that little blinder spot, that little thing that we cannot see, that the little guy in Dr. Zhivago didn't see and millions do not see around the world? And what do we use as a standard by which to determine what that thing is that we are not seeing? And it's a moral issue. It has to do with morality, whatever morality is. And, you know, you can go back to the Ten Commandments, and the fact is, the Muslims go back to the Ten Commandments. They think that Moses was a prophet of God. Abraham was a prophet of God. And Abraham had a form of the Ten Commandments. It was reduced down a little bit. But was it Maat? The laws of Egypt included what we see as the Ten Commandments in their, whatever it was, I think at one time it was about 67 laws. And it's been around as a moral level, bubble, plumb bob, measure for centuries in religions all over the world, but they all, almost all, are missing it today. They're not seeing it. They just kind of pass over it. Although it's very clear, very concise, it's really irrefutable when you look at it. I mean, you cannot argue against it unless you're insane. And of course, everybody is insane. Everybody does not see it. Their mind is operating in a different way. It's a strong delusion, It is the lie that everybody has come to believe. They think they believe in Jesus. You know, this whole idea of believing in Jesus or believing in Moses, what it is that they are creating an image of Jesus in their mind, or an image of Moses, or an image of Muhammad, or an image of, you know, somebody they think is a prophet of God, or God himself. They create an image of God in their minds. They may not actually make it out of wood or stone, but they create it in their minds. And they worship that image in their minds. Now, that whole commandment of, you know, not creating any graven image is not creating anything with your hands. You don't create anything with your hands that you worship. Anything with your hands that you worship. Whether you do it out of stone or metal or wood. Well, you see, when people wrote the Constitution, or people hold up the Constitution, that's created on wood. We call it paper, but it's wood. It's flexible wood, but it's wood. And we have this Constitution written on it by the hand of man, although a lot of times we have it printed on, but a man made the printer. We are creating this institution. We are creating the institution of the United States federal government. We're creating the institution of the parliament. Our parents did. Our grandparents did. And then we worship that institution. We even talk about it being the supreme law of the land. And we have an image in our mind of what we think it means. And there's some good ideas in there. And there were some good men behind the creation of it. But good men can do bad things. But the fact is, you deserve the Constitution. You should have the Constitution. You need the Constitution. Because you don't have the Holy Spirit. If you had the Holy Spirit, you'd look at the Constitution and say, well, we don't need that. And that's what most Americans thought back there in 1792. Most Americans were not for the Constitution. They didn't want to create it. They didn't vote for it. They would have voted against it had it been put up to a vote, because they thought it was a bad thing. But other people thought it was a good thing, and they thought they needed it. And they thought they needed it because they did not have the Holy Spirit. Even George Washington thought it was a mistake later on. Regretted that they had done it. But he didn't know what else to do. He thought he needed it. You know, and he thought government, the kind of government they were creating, which was already becoming a bureaucracy, tiny little bureaucracy, but it was a bureaucracy, was important. And it is the course that the soul of America took. And then it took them farther down that road, and farther down that road. So, still we haven't touched upon what it is exactly that is the lie today, everywhere. The strong delusion that people believe that just ain't so. And it's not up there at the beginning of the commandments, where you see, you know, thou shalt not have any other gods before you. You know, like I happened to see the interview of Kelly, the newspaper reporter of Bundy, and somebody was talking about it, so I went and looked it up and listened to it. It was very short, and she didn't understand what she was asking him about and talking to him about, and he wasn't very articulate in explaining it, but he did point out the fact that the people who are bringing the plaintiff in the case is the federal government, the judge is from the federal government, everything is on the side of the federal government. Now you could say, well, the jury of their peers, but the jury of their peers was not allowed to see all the information, because the judge didn't allow all the information to come. The judge very clearly knew that it would be unjust to send these people to jail for 5 years apiece. And he said so. And so he sentenced them to a small amount of time in jail. The truth is, they shouldn't have been sent to jail at all for the charges brought against them. They beat those charges. Because the accusations and the requirements in order to impose those charges do not match the event. They absolutely do not match the event. But there was, and I've seen this in courts many times, the fix was in from the beginning. The word come down from the top that these people needed to go to jail. And the $400,000 fine that was put on top of them for what the judge says was less than $100 worth of damage. The expert said that there was no damage, zero damage done to BLM property. They actually said that the land was improved by the fires. With the first fire, that was its intention. It's to burn up weed invasive species on their own land. Actually, a little bit of it went over onto the BLM ground. And one of the fires, only an acre of BLM ground was even burned. And in all cases, it improved the BLM ground. The BLM did not come to put out the fire. They weren't injured in any way. There was no expense or cost to the BLM. Zero. And when it was all done, the ground was better than it was before the fire. And in the second fire's case, they actually protected BLM ground that would have burned if they hadn't started the backfire. These people were heroes. There was nothing to charge them with, except supposedly the family said they had been told that they had permission to burn. The BLM denied it. Absolutely, the case should have been thrown out immediately. No fine should have been allowed to be put upon them at all, because there was no evidence that they broke any rules. Because they had a verbal agreement, and the BLM said, no, they didn't. So it's their word against their word. So there's no evidence that they did anything that harmed at all. And the judge should have clearly been able to see that. But he couldn't. Or he wouldn't. I don't know. I mean, he had 40 years experience. He should have known. But he sent them to jail based on a crime that requires a 5-year sentence that they beat. They beat the charges. The evidence beat the charges. But he ramrodded them. I mean, the jury didn't know that these people were going to go to jail for 5 years. The jury should have demanded the instructions to know what is the sentencing here. But anyway, injustice took place. Terrible injustice. There's a huge one-sidedness here. The bureaucracy is just, and this is not the only family they've done this to. You know, the ranches that were burned, you know, when they burn up thousands of acres of feed, it's not just the cost of the feed. Those animals have to eat, even though that there's no feed there. The wildlife, you know, I've seen, you know, the fire that got out of control because the Forest Service all went home. And, you know, I told them in the large meeting, I blame ourselves because we talk about this being our forest and we left it to their charge. We had ranchers on the scene that were trying to put out the fire, but we were poorly organized. You know, at the very beginning, it was a lightning strike. And an old guy and his son were out there trying to fight the fire, and it was way down in a very inaccessible part, and they were having trouble getting there. If we had gotten together and gone there, we could have put that out to begin with. But we thought that, but the truth is the Forest Service actually threatens you if you show up to try to put out the fire. They say you can't do it because we're in charge. Used to be, Forest Service would call all the ranchers up and they would go there, and we used to put out these fires. You know, that's old timers will tell you. We used to put out these same fires years ago with half the equipment, with a fraction of the equipment. They're not able to do it now without the loss of life, because there's a certain common sense amongst ranchers and farmers, because they actually deal with real problems and solve them daily. They have to. They have to get the job done. Nature requires it. In the nature of the bureaucracy, it's not required that you actually produce something, solve a problem, make it work. It's not required. It's required that you fill out this paper and that paper and this paper. It's a different spirit that's operating, because it's not natural. It's a bureaucracy. It's a created institution. And it's created with a certain spirit. One of those spirits is that I don't want to be bothered. I will give them the job to do it. You see, that's key. And we're not to the strong delusion yet. But that's a very key thing. People don't, you know, when there was corruption in the courts at the time of Samuel, and people were taking bribes and causing people to lose their livelihood or their property or maybe even their lives, because people were taking bribes, people were influenced. It was injustice in the courts at the time of Samuel. And the people said, give us a king, because the king will go and fix this corruption from the top down. Of course, you're going to have to give some power to the king. And the king is going to have this little string whip that he can go around and fire people. You're fired, you're fired, you're fired, because I see corruption here. I see abuse of the institutions of man. That's why they elect a king. That's why David was elected. David could fire the porters of the temple, which we call money changers at the time of Jesus Christ. And that's what Jesus Christ was doing. He was firing them. He was made a string whip and going around. You can see kings, pharaohs had this string whip on one hand and a scepter in the other hand. You're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired. That's what he was doing. He wasn't tipping over tables and making change roll across the ground. Makes for good video, movies, but that's not what he was doing. He was firing the money changers, the tax collectors. And they had made, because this was the month of Adar. This was tax day. And these are the money changers. You had to pay the tax with a certain kind of money. And so it cost you more to buy that money to pay the tax. And so that's what was really happening there. They were going to collect over, you know, what would have been millions of dollars. And the way that taxes worked there then is they would get a clip. They would get a portion of it, would go, and they would make millions of dollars. And Jesus stopped that. And they had to stop Jesus. Follow the money. That's why he was crucified. So anyway, that's the people said, we don't want to resolve this issue of corruption in the courts from the ground up, which is the way that God wanted us to do it, to take the responsibility to go there. And you could do this. You know, I gave the example, Humboldt County, they were being abusive. People showed up at a meeting. They filled the room. They filled the hallways. There were people standing outside because they couldn't even get into the hallways of the court. That's how abusive it got before people actually came down and did something. And they shut that part of the government down. And they you know, which was the building department, the abusive part of it, you know, where they take out guns and point them in your face because they say you didn't get a proper building permit. And there was a lot worse stuff going on. It's a very corrupt county. But it stopped. Of course, it's getting back that way again. And it's going to continue because the people are apathetic. They're not really taking the responsibility. They don't really care. A lot of those people showed up because they had offended so many people. They didn't show up because they loved their neighbor as themselves. But when they showed up, things changed. If people were to gather together like Christians gathered together, real Christians, not the Christians today, real Christians, the Hammonds would be pardoned and released. And it should be. You know, they're not saints. I'm sure they do things wrong. But what they did, what they're in jail for, what they got a $400,000 fine for, they should have been given a banquet, a reward, because they improved the ground and they stopped a fire. Someone who evidently is a vegetarian says that they're not going to help the Hammonds because they're in this evil business of ranching. They probably think they're an environmentalist. The ranchers, you can come here and you can look. The wildlife is on the ranches. The local Fish and Wildlife is going to buy a big chunk of ground that a guy came and he developed for wildlife. He punched down wells, made these huge ponds and everything, and now they're going to sell that to the Fish and Wildlife. The wildlife is over on the ranches that surround this property. And they got some water, and they will land on that water and everything, and they will do some nesting in there. But they don't eat there. The real feeding is done somewhere else. There are less ducks and geese in this area now than there were before the Fish and Wildlife took over. Far less, fraction of what there used to be. Now, actually, to give them some credit, the people who are in charge of the Fish and Wildlife right now, who I've known for 30 years, recognizes that cattle are good for wildlife. They're very important to it. Because I've seen him say that in a meeting. Some environmentalist came in there and said, cattle destroy the land and all that stuff. And he says, no. They're essential for the balance needed to make a good wildlife habitat. He knows that. Unfortunately, he's about to retire. Somebody else is going to come in, and it's going to get worse again. Because the beast lives on. The power structure lives on. This thing that this institution we've created lives on. And he and many others have this blind spot that they don't see that they're feeding the beast nature in society. They're drawing the Hitlers and Mao Zedongs into positions in power, where they're going to be corrupted by that power. Solomon was corrupted by the power that he was given. Broke every rule in the book. Power corrupts. And these institutions give power where it shouldn't be. When they created the United States government, they tried to create what they call the balance of power doctrine. They gave some power to Congress, and some power to the executive office, the presidency, and some power to the judiciary. And they were supposed to balance each other out. Now, when we talk about some power, where was the rest of the power? They didn't give them all the power. The rest of the power was in the people. They knew they were concentrating power. They knew they needed to divide it up a little bit. So they created these three branches of government so that the power that they gave to government was divided to keep each section of government within check. But Samuel tells you that if you do this, the power is going to be centralized. And they're going to take and take and take and take and take and take. He warns you. And they still wanted it. In a free country, all the power is in the hands of the people. Not democratically, but individually. That's what a pure republic is. Power is in the hands of the people. And the leaders are titular. That you go, see, we don't even use that word anymore. Most people don't know what that means. The leaders in a republic, the leaders are titular. They don't have any power. their position as a leader is in name only. They want to go and invade a country, they have to do it with an all-volunteer army. All the money they get to support that army has to be given voluntarily. You know, like when they built the Golden Gate Bridge. It wasn't a government project. That was done with voluntary funds. Now, they actually used some government, not funds, but they used some government powers in order to do this, but it was the power to enforce contract. Because people pledged their homes again and borrowed money against their homes to get the money to build the Golden Gate Bridge. And then they were supposed to bring that, the bridge would bring funds back and eventually pay for the bridge. And the people would get their money back, supposedly. But unfortunately, they're using a money that is not according to the biblical morality. So that's another problem. But what is that key thing, that key lie that we have come to accept as true, that's okay, that's moral, that is not moral, that is bringing this whole nation and the whole world down? I mean, you can see layers and layers and layers of it. I mean, the fact that GMOs are banned in country after country after country, but they're promoted in this country. And it's bad enough that the GMOs are causing tremendous health problems all across the nation, very clearly. Health problems in animals, health problems in people. And they still are producing it. The evidence is just getting to be overwhelming. But you got $1 million, $1 billion in advertising to try to make people think that, oh, we need GMOs. GMOs are important. And people believe that lie. But why do they believe that lie? It's because they've already believed another lie that puts scales on their eyes so they cannot see the problem. They think they see, but they cannot see the problem. So how do you get down to the, I mean, you see this layers and layers and layers, and we want to get down to the very source of the problem. Because when we get to the source of the problem and we fix that, we fix everything. Everything begins to become fixed all because it's all built on this basic bottom layer lie. And it's easy to solve. Well, I should say easy. It's a very practical plan. But it's going to be painful. But if you don't solve it, it's going to be way more painful. We'll be back in a minute. Stay tuned. Because this is how to defeat the enemy.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.